This is Ben Smith. I'm a photographer, and this is my podcast, A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. Thanks for listening. Hey people, this is Ben. This is A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers, my podcast. See, the voice is still weird. Still the hay fever, even though the weather's rubbish. So that's like the worst of both worlds right there. Anyway, I've gone into one already. Sorry, I hope you're okay. How are you? Nice to have you along. Also, I just realised we're past the solstice. The summer solstice was like yesterday or today. So that means that already the days will be getting shorter from now on, even though we've hardly even begun the summer here. See, that always does my head in. I can't ever quite get my head around. I think that's seasonal lag, I think, is the term for that, isn't it? But it just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. And it upsets me, frankly. So that's happening. I digress. This is A Small Voice Conversation with Photographers. Today, I have another double act, a bit like we had a few weeks ago. We had Matthew Genitempo and Brian Schutmatt together. Both of them were reviewers at the Chico Hot Springs portfolio online review that happened recently. And I'm going to bring you two more individuals from the same event, two more great photographers, and that is Igor Posner and Ben Brody. And I will introduce them properly in a minute. But this will be the last of the double acts. It's just the kind of a one-off thing, well, a two-off thing, if we want to put it that way. And I hope you enjoy this, because I think the one with Brian and Matthew went well. And it's good to give you that material, because I don't want to waste it. I was reserving it for my members. And you can join as a member, as you know, at pod.fan for £5 a month to get exclusive special content that no one else can get. Having said that, you're going to get this, but the members get all kinds of other stuff. There are a lot of reviewers that I spoke to from that event, and most of them will feature on the members only edition of this podcast, which, like I say, you can join up and become a member of at pod.fan. Anyway, I'm going to introduce Igor and Ben in a second. What do I need to tell you first? Yeah, sign up for the members podcast. I just said that already. Leave a review on iTunes if you haven't already. If you want a website, I'll build you one with Squarespace. See, I'm losing the will to live already. Let me just get on with it. So the first thing is that this episode of A Small Voice is, of course, sponsored by the Brilliant Charcoal Book Club, the monthly subscription service for photo book enthusiasts that brings essential, limited edition and hard-to-find photo books to your doorstep. Working with the most respected names in contemporary photography, Charcoal Book Club selects and delivers essential photo books to a worldwide community of collectors, whether they be long-time enthusiasts with a stock library or novices just beginning to build their collection. Join up as a member, and each month you'll receive a new museum-quality first edition monograph to add to your shelves, handpicked by Charcoal's team of expert curators and signed by the artist, along with a signed note card and an exclusive print. Sometimes the book of the month will be a classic title every bibliophile should own, and sometimes it will be a new release from an emerging artist who's poised to make big waves. They offer free shipping to the UK, Canada and the US, and members also get exclusive perks such as signed copies, access to rare titles, members-only pricing in Charcoal's online bookstore and more, all of which makes the Charcoal Book Club the best, easiest and most exciting way to stay up to date with essential work in contemporary photography. So, my duo this week, the two photographers who I want to introduce, if I can actually find the text. This is obviously bios from their own respective websites. Igor Posner was born in Leningrad, or St. Petersburg as it became. After the fall of the Soviet Union, Igor moved to California in the early 90s. He studied molecular and cell biology at the University of California in Los Angeles, where he first started to take pictures and experiment in the darkroom. This initial infatuation with picture-taking led Igor to explore the silent and haunting experience of walking after dark on the streets of Los Angeles and Tijuana. This first series of images, No Such Records, savours the strange solitude of the enigmatic region between California and Mexico, amid the streets, bars, night shelter hotels, and its disappearing night figures. After 14 years I got returned to St. Petersburg in 2006, taking up photography full-time, which led to a book project entitled Past Perfect Continuous, published by Red Hook Editions in 2017. At present, Igor is based in New York and working on a long-term project exploring psychological aspects of migration and the gradual disappearance of neighborhoods based on Russian immigrant communities in North America. Igor's work's been shown in North America, Europe, Russia, and Southeast Asia, and he joined the Prospect Photographers Agency as a full member in 2011. Ben Brody is an independent photographer, educator, and picture editor working on long-form projects related to the American wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and their aftermath. He's a director of photography for the Ground Truth Project and Report for America and a co-founder of Mass Books. His first book, Attention Service Member, published by Red Hook Editions and designed by Kummer and Herman, was shortlisted for the Aperture Paris Photo First Book Award. Also was a Charcoal Book Club Book of the Month. And Ben holds an MFA from Hartford Art School's International Low Residency Photography Program, and he lives in Western Massachusetts. So if you want to check out the various references from those bios, go to the show notes on the website at bensmithphoto.com/smallvoice. So this episode will follow the same basic format that the one with Matthew and Brian did. In other words, there'll be a number of set questions that we did for this special Q&A, and Igor and Ben will answer a selection of them. Hope you enjoy this chat. Well, not really a chat, but this Q&A I did, and both of these people I hope will end up doing a full episode at some point. Igor Posner, Ben Brody. Let's just go for it. So obviously these are the questions for photographers. You kind of wear two hats in a way, because I know you're involved with Red Hook Editions with the publishing business, but we've got lots of publishers to talk to as well, so I want to talk to you as a photographer.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Are you able to pass on one or two useful tips when it comes to editing and sequencing images for a book?
Yes, I mean, it's quite complex, and I think you, as a photographer, you go through different stages of development, and your priorities change as well. And I think it's important to recognize that that's a key. I speak from my experience, but generally, I think each photographer, you know, they have their own philosophy, and that's fine. For me, my preference always to let the images dictate the edit. I think I'd like to be surprised just by the. Essentially, I'm treating the images as a raw material, nothing else. I don't want to be an illustrator. I prefer to stray from illustrating something by way of images, but rather let the images kind of like find their interesting connection, this mysterious, maybe ambiguous quality, so that's just generally my approach.
And when you begin a project, are you thinking about how it will end up, whether it's going to be a book or an exhibition, etc.? And if so, does that influence your practice during the shooting phase?
No, I never think about that. I think that I'm mainly driven by perhaps, you know, some attraction to like a place or something. Starting a project and thinking about a book or exhibition, it's too ambitious for me. It's too contrived. It's not natural. Like for me, what's important is to maybe push myself to embark on kind of a journey, which in the end should be sort of like a revelation. I treat photography as trivial as it sounds, but it's kind of like it's a way of discovery, something. Or it's a way of self discovery. I feel like if I treat photography that way, then it really stands on its own. That I'm not sort of using photography as a cinematic tool or as a literary tool, or it's where like the medium stands on its own. That's my general way of thinking. And you know, the book or exhibition, Yeah, it's part of the journey, but it comes later. It may or might not wind up being a book. You know, I have certain standards for instance, making a book. I think it has to be sort of like this process of revelation. It should be beyond your personal vanity to have a book. It has to serve like a higher purpose for me. And so I have to be honest with myself. You know, some things are just good to stay as a series of photos. It doesn't need to be a book. And then, like later, when let's say if the book is published, exhibition is entirely different animal because you need to play with the space. There is a sense of perspective, and I my preference would be like not to repeat sequentially what I did in the book, but rather explore the space, the potential of the space, and maybe there is even more profound connection between the images that you could play with. I think that's the beauty of photography, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you feel creatively exhausted or uninspired or blocked, what do you do to get yourself moving forward again?
Oh, boy. You know what? I was thinking the other day that you kind of always think, oh, I need to find a balance, but I'll never be able to find a balance. It's more like a balancing act, like it's a perpetual balancing act more than anything. Like there are different things, like my approach, like the way I take photos or the way I work is very physical and also emotionally. I would feel quite exhausted, so I need to pace myself. And so I almost need this period of dormancy. I think they're fine. What keeps me going? I don't know. I tend to like kind of like make different analogies or come up with like metaphors. It's just kind of it's more like a thinking process. I can't really define it. You know, sometimes it's something like simple as like, you know, talking to my son because he's so free. He's 8. It's still like a beautiful age. He's not like his thinking is so plain and simple, and it's just beautiful at that and unassuming. So that could be an inspiration. You know, sometimes like, you know, reading a book or watching a film. Even if I feel down, sometimes it's like an effort for me to actually start watching a film. But after the process of watching like a film, it seems cathartic, almost like, oh, okay. I like the next day I feel almost like cleaner, you know. So yeah.
Mm. Anything else outside of photography that you're passionate about? Do you have any other obsessions?
Yeah, I don't know. I could be obsessed about my shoes. I could be obsessed about a Japanese knife. I mean, there is like things that I get obsessed about, and I almost like can't control about myself. But they're like obsessions. They're not like last long. Like they don't last for a very long time. But yeah, it's just kind of like it's just part of my personality. Sometimes I get like very anxious about things, and yeah, just get obsessed about like seemingly stupid stuff or something that is not particularly meaningful, you know.
Do you rely on a number of distinct income streams to make a living, and if so, how is that income pie chart made up for you?
No, I don't rely. I think like over the years I've learned to like maybe diversify. You know, when I was starting, I was like purely driven by this longing to take photos, to discover something new, to put myself in like dangerous situations. It felt like incredibly like romantic almost. And then, you know, over the years, so you've accumulated this like number of images, or like, so this is your kind of like your body of work is shaping, and then you learn to edit and you learn to design You learn to take interest in other things that are not maybe directly photography, but maybe kind of like applied science. And yeah, I feel like it actually makes me like a better photographer. So anyway, just to answer your question, no, there's no one way to make money. And it's also very deceptive. Like, for instance, this month I've sold, you know, three specials, special editions of my book and a couple of silver gelatin prints. And you know what? It's a good feeling, but I know next month it's not going to happen. So, yeah, and I've okay. learned, and I've learned that, just to contain myself, always kind of like be open to other opportunities. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Is there a particularly exciting photo book that you might have come across in recent times, or you could pick a photographer if you want, if there was someone you became aware of recently, mm-hmm. but either a book or a photographer?
Mm-hmm. Photo book, I don't know. I have to think. It's a complicated subject. But photographer, I really like Sabia Chaman. She's a Magnum nominee. She's like so wonderful and so free. And again, yeah. she has like her images are so strong. It's almost like refreshing. And also they're like, it seems like they're like open hearted, and she's not like feeding into this sort of like pre-existing stereotypes, even though like her subject is you know quite can be quite easily stereotyped. So I would say her.
Sabia. Yeah, she was on the podcast.
Oh,
recently.
Wonderful! Yeah.
So okay, another similar kind of difficult question, because no one ever can pick one, but. Do you have a favorite photo book? And it could just be, you know, your favorite one today, and tomorrow could be a different one. Or is there a photo book that's been particularly influential?
Yes, sure. I wouldn't say that there's just one single photo book, but maybe there's like three or four that they've been instrumental in sort of like my like shaping of my philosophy or thinking. The first one is Black, White, and Things by Robert Frank. I think that book taught me how to treat photography in kind of a poetic way, instead of just being illustrator. It just for some reason it taught me that the material could really go under the skin. It's more about metaphors, and maybe there is a very strong existential quality to the images, or at least the way you see them. And it's also particularly important because that book for me, I think that it taught me sort of to never jump on a bandwagon of any social movements, but rather to actually question myself and how I fit into this world. And in that sense, photography is just a wonderful tool for just kind of like your own enrichment, you know, to actually making a change by having this kind of like awareness within you of who you are and how you want to relate to the world outside of you. Maybe that the real change comes from that, rather than, you know, again, as I said, advocating a specific, you know, social idea, etc. And then another book is William Klein's New York. I think William is just, he is incredibly free. Like whatever he touches, it's just, he has his own like uniqueness, and he's just free of like, he doesn't care what people think about him. And, but then again, he photographs, it's the way he does it, it's quite physical, which I could relate. I think I always need to have this physical presence. It's almost like important that my heart is beating. And also, like in the way that he put together this book, it's just the ultimate city book. It's fantastic. And then the third one is I would say "Gypsies" by Kudelka. That book is amazing because I think we have sort of like preconceived stereotypes about Roma people, gypsies, and there's like a number of preconceived notions about them, and you know, maybe some of them are actually true, that's fine, but he chose, like, instead of like exploding this and feeding to existing stereotypes, he consciously chose to show these people from like a human perspective, so they're also like, they born and die and fall in love, and so there's like I can relate to them, so there's like a different angle, different perspective. It's wonderful. I think we should be like, it's a lot more challenging actually to photograph something like that instead of like showing the difference. Like, you know, let's say if I photograph in St. Petersburg, Russia, and Mexico City, it's much easier to show the difference than to show like the similar qualities, but because they're not on the surface. So yeah, that's it.
So now, where do you see the market for photo books heading in the next few years? You're kind of actively involved with, as I say, with Red Hook, and so you kind of wear that hat as well. Mm. Have you got any thoughts about that?
I don't want to think in terms of like where the market is heading. I think the kind of a litmus test for me is to actually publish something that I believe in, so that way I could treat somebody else's work as if it's my own work, and so that's my kind of like guiding tool. I think it's kind of a trap to think to where market is heading. It's constantly in kind of a turmoil and it's changing. You're gonna drive yourself nuts, Like, you know, there are so many photo books, it's very difficult to navigate. But I think it's important for me to have, like, maybe my own set of standards by which I'd like to operate. It gives me kind of a solid foundation. And as always, I want to do well by my authors. Because we're, like, Jason and I, we're doing Red Hook editions, and we're both photographers. It was actually born out of this maybe necessity to be treated with respect, and we want photographers to actually make money on their book and to retain some creative control, so we would like to continue this collaborative process where maybe like the publishing the book is not the target, but also is not the final goal. But the process itself, it's very important because we challenge each other. It's supposed to leave a mark on you, you know, somehow. Mm.
Is there a particular photographer who has been most influential on you, on your work, if you had to pick
Robert
one?
Frank.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, I could explain why. I don't know if it needs to be. So, but.
Yeah. No. And that book that you chose, black, white, and things. Did you say? Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Yeah. Because that's, you know, that's, I guess, one of the less well known.
And yet,
ones.
It's his very first effort. It came out before the Americans. He made three book dummies.
So that's the one with stuff from London in it, is it?
It's actually from different places. There's material from Spain, from Wales. So it's incredibly like how he can create something existentially important that speaks of our kind of like universal consciousness without attaching something to a particular place. And the concept is so simple and it seems to be so sincere, you know, black, white, and things. Yeah. And then there's another book by him, which is incredibly important for me. It's The Lines of My Hands.
That one does get referenced a fair bit.
I can explain as to why, but it's a very important book for me.
Mm. No, let's keep it mysterious.
Yes, I agree.
What advice should young photographers ignore? Are there recommendations that you hear a lot, but that you totally disagree with?
I don't know. I need to have like a list of advices by other people, because it seems like when I'm doing portfolio reviews, I mean, it's a private thing. You're doing like one-on-one. I have no idea what the reviewer next to me is talking. So it's, I just don't want to kind of like assume what other people might be suggesting. It's almost like I would be like talking to myself, you know. But yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it's a question. There's an assumption there that you know, you might have kind of come across other people offering advice where you've, for whatever reason, gone, actually, no, I don't agree with that at all. But yeah, it's a sort of question that actually does require, it does require a little bit of thought.
Like, there are some conflicting things. I know that, like, some of my friends are, for example, they're also teaching, and they're honest photographers. They've dedicated their life to photography, but they, for example, they feel obligated to explain to maybe younger photographer, like, how to make money with photography. I feel... And you know, that's fine, but I feel like maybe this is not the most essential thing. You will find a way to make money with photography, but you also have to have a realization that the true measure is actually continuity. It's a very, very difficult path. Like, do you have this longing within you? And can you just embrace the journey? And if you embrace the journey, there are so many unknown possibilities that will come your way that you know, you'll find your way out. You'll find a way to sustain yourself, hopefully. So like my general philosophy is just the openness, and but also like independent thinking, like not to you know, you don't need to sell yourself to anybody, but just always have this free mind, this kind of like independent state of mind. It's hard. It's not easy.
Well, that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Much appreciated, and good to reconnect with
you.
Likewise. Couldn't see you, but next time.
I think we might be able to meet each other again in maybe in October in Montana.
Yeah, I didn't even want to mention it in case you know, it doesn't happen, but I certainly hope that will happen.
Yeah, it was fun and refreshing. Good memories, and you know, we'll talk some more. We're working on 3 books right now, which is like very exciting. But we're taking baby steps.
Okay. Good. Well, as long as you're moving forward, then it doesn't matter how small the steps are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're another person who wears more than one hat, because not only are you a photographer, but you're also a publisher as well. Now you've got your own imprint, but I think fundamentally, I'm going to be talking to plenty of publishers. So I want to talk to you as a photographer, really, and then maybe some of the questions will have a certain amount of kind of crossover.
Sure,
we'll go. Hopefully, you got these in advance. But the first question is: are you able to pass on for us one or two useful tips when it comes to editing and sequencing images for a book? Is there something you can say about that decision-making process?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think that concept informs the edit in a really important way. And when you break down the stages of creating a book, understanding what your book is really saying, understanding... how you want your audience to react to the book, how you want the book to feel. Once you have a really clear understanding of that, editing becomes in a large part an exercise in excising the pictures that don't support that thesis, that don't support that concept. Like, what pictures support what you're trying to say, what pictures interfere with it. And as far as sequencing goes, my favorite thing is to, like, so I spent like $60 on a 4x10 foot piece of sheet steel, and just from the local sheet metal place, tacked it onto my wall. And I print out 4x6s of like all my pictures. And, you know, they, like, I don't print them myself. They're like 5 cents a piece to have printed. And I use magnets to stick them to that piece of sheet steel. That really allows you to step back from your work, particularly with color, and see the way, like, just the actual colors, like, flow between the images on that piece of metal.
Yeah, I have that. I had the exact same arrangement on this wall behind me until a few days ago. I'm going to move flat soon, so I took it down. But yeah, precisely that, 6-4 prints and a big bit of metal. Yeah. That's a good method. It seems to work. So when you begin a project, are you thinking about how it will end up, how it will be in the world as a book or an exhibition? And, you know, if so, does that influence your practice during the shooting phase?
So when I'm starting a project, my hopes are always that it will have some potential as a book, as an exhibition, as sort of a web presence or something that can be published in some aspect in like mass media. So I tend to try not to let that affect my shooting. I tend to try and make the best pictures I can. And, you know, the projects I work on tend to take a long time, like at least a year, maybe two, maybe 15 in case of attention service member. I think it's really, it comes down to what do I want the individual exhibition to say? How do I want the book to function? I think editing is really where my work really starts to take form and find its way into a successful exhibition or a successful book. I mean, you know, attention service member has like 160 pictures in it that were taken over a period of 15 years. So, you know, obviously I wasn't thinking about the book. Mm-hmm. The book came to life in the edit. Mm.
Yeah, I have it behind me and it's a great book. So, yeah, congratulations on it. I enjoy it very much. So when you feel creatively exhausted or uninspired or blocked, is there anything you do to get yourself kind of moving forward again?
Sure. I mean, first off, like, if I'm feeling creatively exhausted or blocked, I tend to just try and let myself be that way for a little while, that I don't always have to be sort of pushing forward and creating new photographs. But that's because I have a pretty diversified practice. That said, when I am working on something important that does have to get done, and I'm not really feeling it, I tend to try and work on an aspect of the project that I'm not that much of an expert in. Like I tend to try and, you know, really think about, like the materials that, like the physical materials that the book will be made on, you know, something where it's like, I know a little bit about it, but I'm not like a real expert, something where I have a lot of room to really dive in and learn something new.
Interesting. Yeah. Is there anything else outside of photography that you're passionate about? Do you have any other obsessions?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who just always has like a new hobby and has really drilled down on some other ones. Like, you know, a few years ago, I built this like absolutely obscenely powerful electric mountain bike motorcycle hybrid thing that I should probably wear a helmet when I'm using. But, you know, also some of that just comes from like making ends meet as a photographer, or as a photojournalist. You know, finding undervalued chainsaws on the local market and fixing them up and selling them, restoring, rebuilding 1970s and 80s Japanese motorcycles. I learned how to be a timber framer last year. So, yeah, it's really important to me to always be learning new things, trying new things.
Well, that sort of brings us neatly onto the next question, really, which is, do you rely on a number of distinct income streams to make a living? And if so, how is that sort of income pie chart made up?
Sure.
Different ways you bring in income.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question for that every photographer has to solve for themselves. You know, coming from the world of photojournalism, which is where I spent most of my early career, I f- feel like I was able to stay in photojournalism by diversifying that income stream into like also having exhibitions, also doing talks in the academic world. Eventually that turned into making a book, which really I didn't see so much as an income stream in itself, because it's almost impossible to make money making a photo book, but as a way of attracting a wider audience. And so currently I'm the director of photography for an organization called Report for America. So that's an important part of my income stream, sort of training and mentoring the next generation of photojournalists working locally. But I also, you know, have my practice at Mass Books, where Peter Van Ogtmail and I are working to bring, to make sort of inexpensive, but still really nice, really legit photo books that challenge systems of power. Mm. So we're working on that.
So that's your own imprint that you've basically got started up with Peter.
Peter and I, it's Mass Books is me and Peter.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just saw that he's been a busy man. He's just got a couple of new books coming out, and he's got one called 2020.
That's right.
About the year in question, and what was the other one? Sorry for the War.
And
your book, Attention Service Member, mm-hmm. initially was published with Red Hook Editions, but I think is now under Mass in the newest edition.
Yeah, the second edition, which I was really lucky to be able to make, is published under Mass Books. It's almost identical to the first edition, but there are a couple of new photographs from 2020.
Here we go. We're sort of ahead of ourselves. What's the most exciting photo book or photographer, if you like, that you've come across in the last year or so, would you say?
Well, in the last year or so is tricky because I honestly haven't seen a ton of new photo books during quarantine. Really, how I like to, you know, engage with photo books is by going down to New York and meeting a bunch of people who are making books, and we all sort of share what we've been looking at recently, but COVID has made that impossible. But, you know, a book was a real sort of eye-opener for me was Carolyn Drake's Two Rivers, Geert van Kesteren's Why, Mr. Why. Artists who really helped me rethink how to put the concept of a photo book in the materials and in the construction and in the production itself, which is something that I always aspire to do.
Mm-mm. Just to sort of back up a little bit with Mass, I mean, is there a genuine prospect of that being a proper income stream for you, or is it more about other things?
Now, Mass is probably not going to make money, or at least certainly it's not going to make money for Peter and I. But the idea is to incubate projects that have a lot of potential. It's basically helping guide people through self-publishing, because I self-published my book, because Peter self-published 2020 and Sorry for the War, rather than going through a big publishing house, we were able to realize some profit. And part of that is because these books are all sort of fall into themes that are of general interest, can get traction in mass media. These books are about themes that you can explain to an editor at the Washington Post, and they'll be like, yeah, I'll definitely review that book. Mm-hmm. So books that can potentially appeal to a broader audience, Attention Service Member is a Dutch photo book that's extremely custom, but it was really important to me that the book find an audience outside of people who are interested in Dutch photo books. That was sort of how we made that work. But I don't really think of it as a serious income stream.
No. Now, do you have a favorite photo book? It could be just, you know, the one that's your favorite today. And it could be a different one tomorrow, but do you have a favorite Or is there one, you know, that was particularly influential on your own practice, perhaps, if you want to answer it that way? Up to you.
Yeah, I mean, so I think I've been influenced equally between photo books I really love and find really inspiring and photo books that I find really problematic and, you know, just dubious. And, you know, especially like working in representations of war, you know, there are a lot of photo books that handle it really well, and there are a lot of photo books that handle it really poorly. But in terms of books that have really inspired me, like I recently got my hands on some of Rob Hornstra's Sochi project, like the little books that came in between. I thought Kiev was really cool. You know, it was this book made, the photographs are all made with a broken Kiev camera. And the book itself is broken. It's like folded up in this really strange way. So when you try and open it, it kind of falls apart. But it's all one piece of cardboard. So it's like made really cheaply, and it's a really cool book. But it, is this amazing like harmony of concept and function that I just, you know, find endlessly entertaining.
Mm. So you can interpret this one however you want in a way, but where do you see the market for photo books heading in the next few years?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, I think like Peter and I created Mass Books because we feel like our approach to photo books has potential in creating somewhat inexpensive books, you know, sort of at the $20 to $30 price point. That are still custom, that are still engaging tactile experiences, but that also handle themes that are of broad interest. So books that will offer a lot to a visual professional, but can also offer a lot, offer like an interesting experience or maybe a first step into the world of serious photo books for somebody who's never really seen one before.
Mm. I think that price point issue is a crucial one, isn't it? Because, you know, a photo book is maybe $50 or $60. That's a lot of money for a lot of people. And, you know, that the idea that you could actually bring that price point down to a point where it's much more affordable, I think, is a really interesting idea.
Yeah, I think self-publishing really opens up a lot of opportunities for that. So Attention Service Member, the first edition, cost about $22 a copy to make. I printed 1,500. So ordinarily, that would sort of put you at like a $60 or $65, $70 book if you were going through like a proper publishing house and you have to pay a distributor and, you know, you have to pay all these... pay somebody to do marketing. But if you do all that yourself, like I did, I was able to sort of artificially bring down the price to $40, which I thought was the right price for that book, even though, like, it's not the customer's fault that I spent too much money making the book.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very funny. I had that exact point was made by Martin Amis, who runs Photo Book Store here in the UK. And yeah, he was talking about that very thing. So there's a neat sort of parallel there to the fact that you mentioned that. Now, is there a photographer whose work has been particularly influential to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Raymond Meeks, certainly it would be a real mistake to ignore what Raymond Meeks has been doing. I look at his work a lot and try and, you know, understand what's going on and sort of, yeah, there's a lot to aspire to there. Carolyn Drake also, you know, is a photojournalist, documentary photographer, who I really think is pushing the medium forward and bringing photojournalism into the future, letting photography really fire on all cylinders and, you know, do.
Have you got Knit Club?
I haven't got it yet. I was just talking with my friend about it. It's on the way.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I'd like to see a physical copy when I get a chance. Yeah, it looks really awesome. Yeah, the pictures look fantastic.
But also, like, you know, I went through the Hartford MFA program, and just within the program, I mean, I found being close to Andrew Waits really influential. And Emma Phillips particularly was a huge influence on me. Matthew Genitempo to some extent. Yeah, so just sort of being in close proximity with those artists for 2 years obviously had a big influence on me.
Right. So in terms of advice, is there any advice that young photographers should ignore? Are there things that you hear recommendations getting thrown around that you actually disagree with?
Well, you know, being so isolated the last year, I haven't actually heard a ton of advice lately. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always sort of have heartburn recommending somebody go $70,000 into a debt for an MFA in photography. I was able to do it on the GI Bill, which, you know, I know that's like my sort of special situation. But that's, you know, a hard financial decision to make. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think like in general, the idea that a young photographer needs to create their own style and sort of apply it to every project they have is a pretty bad idea in terms of nurturing your own growth as an artist. You know, I really think you need to find a style for each project, a style that's in harmony with the concept of the project rather than just being like, this is what I do everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a bit about the Ground Truth Project?
Sure. So the Ground Truth Project is a nonprofit, a journalism initiative that supported my work in Afghanistan for a long time. And yeah, in recent years, I've become the director of photography there. Report for America is one of our initiatives, placing early career reporters in undercovered, like news deserts, finding undercovered beats across the United States, and with the idea of rebuilding local journalism. So my role as director of photography is rebuilding local photojournalism, which has been gutted several orders of magnitude worse than like local writing or local accountability reporting. So we're really rebuilding it from the ground up with an eye towards not like having the photographer be this person who tags along with the writer and takes a picture of somebody's face while they're talking to the reporter, but somebody who dives in and does in-depth visual reporting with an eye towards restorative narratives, understanding how communities have been historically misrepresented visually, taking a very deliberate and sophisticated approach towards making a community feel like it is being reflected fairly in a visual way in the local media, and basically pushing the argument that local photography deserves as much sophisticated insight and deliberate action than, you know, if you were doing a project for the Guardian or for the Post or, you know, a major outlet like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And people can check, if they just Google Ground Truth Project, it will pop up. No, they can check out the website and find out more. Okay, Ben, well, thank you. All done and much appreciated. It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, great. Same. Yeah, hopefully we can connect some more during the charcoal thing.
I hope so. Yeah. Cool.